Welcome to Fine Tuning with Drew Taylor, your one-stop shop when it comes to animation news and commentary. I'm Drew's co-host, entertainment writer Jim Hill, and he and I are recording the show on Saturday, June 25th, 2022, which is just one day after... Look, you're all smart people who pay attention to the news. You know what happened yesterday. And I'm betting one of the reasons you sought out this podcast today is you really don't want to hear anything else about that topic. You need a break, and Drew and I will try our level best to give you that break today. Before we get started here, I just want to say one thing. There are just 19 weeks between when the show goes live on Tuesday, June 28th, and Election Day, which this year is being held on Tuesday, November 8th. And I know Drew and I have previously asked you to mark your calendars when it comes to release dates for movies, or when books about animation are going to hit store shelves, or when a new holiday special is going to debut on television. This time around, folks, we really need you to circle Tuesday, November 8th on your calendar, because we all need to go to the polls on that day and vote. Every single one of us. No excuses. That's all I have to say about that for now, right, Drew? Or, you know?
Yes, we're going to have a delightful 40 minutes of nonsense that'll get your mind off things. And
there we you go. Know.
But yes, we want to remind you, circle that date, double underline it. Wherever you are in the country, this is an incredibly important year, as every year is, but especially this year.
Especially this year. Okay. Yes. Yeah. Back to the animation news. And as always, the news portion of today's Fine Tuning is brought to you by Story Destination, trusted travel partner of the Jim Hill Media Podcast Network. For a worry-free travel experience, please book online at storybookdestinations.com. On last week's show, which Drew and I recorded on another Saturday, June 18th, we were talking about the revised box office projections that were coming in at that time for Lightyear. Just to remind you, in the days leading up to the domestic release of Pixar's latest, industry box office experts were predicting that this Angus McLean movie would sell somewhere between what, 70 to 85 million worth of tickets. Right? That was what
yeah.
was thing for North America. But by Saturday morning of last week, after tabulating the tickets that were sold for Lightyear on Friday, industry insiders then began revising their box office projections for Pixar's latest downward, suggesting that it would be far more likely over its opening weekend in North America that this Angus McLean movie would do a third less business than had previously been projected. We're talking domestic ticket sales for Lightyear between 51 and 55. And even then, Drew, did you see that it came in below that point? I mean, just a hair?
No, what was the final tally?
They're saying 50.6 million worth of tickets again in North America. And we talked last week about why this might be happening. But what's been interesting is there's been further refinement on that. And to be honest, Drew, some of this is your fault. I mean, you're the big champion of Mr. Cruise and Maverick. And you see, this weekend, it's supposed to go through $500 million domestic.
It could be the number one movie in the country again this weekend, Jim. Besting Elvis, which came out this weekend, Jurassic World Dominion, and Lightyear. I mean, that's and The Black Phone, which is another big new release from Universal.
Well, no, you're not wrong. In fact, this past Wednesday and Thursday, which is 4 months after the Kaczynski movie, it had really come out. Top Gun Maverick was the number one film in the country for those 2 days. I mean, that's kind of crazy. I think the movie has done that. And it's world, you know, blotting out the sun. I mean, that's just crazy. Yeah. But anyway, speaking of which, one of the reasons that Lightyear only did 50.6 million was that in its second weekend at theaters, Jurassic World Dominion did 59 million worth of tickets. And it's you and I have talked, you know, pre-game about this. You know, there's nothing I want to see more when I go to a movie that's supposed to be about dinosaurs than giant locusts. I'm having a little trouble understanding why it's doing as well as it is, but I guess it's dinosaurs and it's Jurassic Park, Jurassic World, whatever. You know, people are going to come out.
Did you go see Lightyear finally?
And just this afternoon, I finally found the AMC in Wisconsin. It's literally a block over. So tomorrow, while she's in her last day of all things Hallmark movies, see it. But I was looking for an at this point, you know, it's off of IMAX screens, and in fact, I guess they've gone back to toggling back and forth between Jurassic World Dominion and Top Gun Maverick.
Yeah, I think next weekend it's like four movies are vying for, you know, it's like every other show at the IMAX screen is a different movie.
That's crazy.
But yeah, I think I'm going to try to see it in IMAX tomorrow, actually, so I hopefully can report back on how Lightyear looks in IMAX. And I also want to plug, for anyone that loved the Michael Giacchino score, that there is a vinyl release from Mondo that I did the liner notes for. So go check that. You can put it next to the Coco and Up vinyls that I did the liner notes for and have a nice little box set there.
But again, I've still been trying to kind of wrap my head around what happened with Lightyear. So the gentleman I called, and you've talked to him, Drew, so you'll know who this is, and asked him what he thought. And he basically sort of laid it out for the fact that, you know, they pinned a lot of this movie, the setup to the film, on Andy. You know, the young boy we meet in the original Toy Story back in 1995, and more importantly, the kid we saw go off to college after leaving his toys Bonnie in Toy Story 3 back in 2010, so a dozen years ago. And he really believes that, you know, it's, we saw this kid exit the series, you know, and, you know, for 12 years now, the toys have belonged to Bonnie. In fact, you know, didn't we just, 2019, we got Toy Story 4, where, you know, a very big deal about we leaving Bonnie and going off with Bo Peep to take her lost toys. This character left the series. And, and so the fact that we are supposed to be so concerned about, you know, oh, this is the film that Andy watched and got him so excited about his Buzz Lightyear action figure. And it's like, hasn't the train left the station? Why would we be concerned about it? You know, I mean, but that's,
I get that. I mean, there was so much, you know, kind of Monday morning quarterbacking going on that I'm sure you saw. You know, and we talked about some of the reasons last weekend, and it looks like this weekend it's really going to take a precipitous drop as well. So I was kind of hoping, because I think the movie is really wonderful and there's so many charming elements to it, that I thought it could kind of be a more of a long con, but it looks like it is sort of like, as you said, that they didn't even get the IMAX release they were supposed to get. No. You know, there's so much competition and people just aren't showing up. And I think that was also a failure kind of the marketing, that this was an actual Pixar movie that was made for IMAX, which is the first time that's ever happened, nobody knew about it, and I don't know. I just think I think the marketing is to blame more than anything else, but I don't know.
The film that this seems to line up so much with is Cars 3, back in the summer of 2017. In fact, that Brian McPhee movie opened in 4,256 theaters, whereas Lightyear opened in 4,255 theaters. And that one did $53.6 million in North America. So they're within spitting distance of one another. In fact, what's interesting is that Cars 3 sold $74.7 million worth of tickets over its first 7 days in domestic release, whereas Lightyear sold $71 million. So they're very much on par. The thing is that Cars 3 went on to earn $152 million in North American theaters and 231 overseas for a worldwide box office of $383 million. But really, it got to spend months in theaters. You know, I mean, and the Blu-ray didn't even go on sale till November 17th of that year. And that was 5 years ago. And we now live in this streaming service driven, you know, I mean, the windows have changed. I mean, did you see where Bob's Burgers movie is? I mean, 6 weeks.
Yeah, I think it's,
you know.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and Doctor Strange was on this week. Like, it's just crazy how quick it is. As someone who remembers, you know, waiting what seemed like 5 years for E.T. to come out on video and 18 months for Jurassic Park and all these things. It's like, so, yeah, I wonder if, you know, and I think there is a possibility that it becomes a more sizable thing on Disney Plus. Well, like we saw Encanto.
I wanted to be sure we talked about that because I really believe that's a great observation on your part. To the effect of Bruno didn't become, it was big, but it didn't become huge until after it began airing on Disney Plus. And I have to tell you from conversations with folks on consumer products, they're like, oh, they're supposedly talking with the big boxes about, please keep the Lightyear stuff out and accessible, because once it hit Disney Plus, this movie will kickstart. That, you know, that it'll really happen.
Oh, that's interesting.
But beyond that, I mean, it's just, I mean, I'm sure you saw the story about the 89er theater in Kingfisher, Oklahoma, kind of the whole notion of, oh my God, there's a, you know, same-sex kiss in this, and we're going to try to fast forward through it, and it's like, you've seen the film, right? You've seen the kiss, which is barely a kiss.
Yeah, I mean, people were sharing it on Twitter. If you can share it on Twitter, then it is brief. You know, like, yeah, it's ridiculous.
And then you have things like Patricia Heaton's tweet about, you know, how dare they replace Tim Allen as the voice of, you know, how they effectively have castrated Buzz Lightyear by having Chris Evans as the voice. And I was intrigued that Disney, it was one of those things where it's like, don't respond. You know, don't say anything. Because, face it, you need Tim Allen happy. Because you must have seen the image that came out earlier this week for the Santa Clauses.
Well, that's what I thought was so funny about saying, like, you know, that you're castrating Tim Allen. Not only do you have him coming back for something, but you actually get to see him. So I don't think that is really that big a thing. And I think that the timing of that image, which I know was part of the larger Disney company's kind of halfway to Christmas programming, was very pointed and saying, like, we still love Tim Allen. Here's a new project that he's going to be in.
But at the same time, I mean, you got to love how the internet could even take that and to find a way to bend it and twist it back on Disney. Because what they showed, the two new elves that are helping Santa, Devin Bright, who's playing Noel, Santa's right hand elf, and Matilda Lawler, who's playing Betty, Santa's chief of staff. But all anyone could talk about is, where's David Crummell? Where's Bernard?
Yeah.
Who's in the original Santa Claus in 94 and then the Santa Claus 2 in 2002. He wasn't part of Escape Clause in 2006, right?
I've never seen the sequels, Jim.
Well, you've lived a good life, Drew. You know.
I'm not missing anything, is what you're telling me.
What's interesting is that even Freeform won't show Santa Claus 2. They will actually step over Santa Claus 2. They'll show the original Santa Claus and they'll show Santa Claus 3, the Escape Clause. But it's like, no, we're not showing that one.
Remember when Santa Claus 2 was supposed to be the Escape Clause and they even had a trailer for it and everything? And then,
I mean, there was a great Wall Street Journal article about, you know, because think about it. It took them 8 years to find a story for the Santa Claus sequel. And when it finally came out, it's like, this is the 8 years, 8 years you labored. And this is what you came up with.
Listen, Jim, good things take time. Well,
they needed more time. All right. And speaking of time, it's time for us to take a break here, folks. But when we get back, things are a little ass backwards on the show. So we just did a featuring news segment. So let's go do a newsy feature. It's summer. We are all looking for interesting things to do this summer. So I wanted to start off by talking up. Have you heard about this making of the Jungle Book thing that's at the Walt Disney Family Museum?
I have, by our friend Andreas Deja, kind of curated
that's
it.
That's true. Right? That's true. Just opened this past Thursday, June 23rd, is going to run in the, I want to say it's the Diane Disney Miller building. It's a special exhibit space Andreas guest curated this thing, which is because Andreas is very upfront about the fact that, wasn't it when he was a kid in Germany, he saw the Jungle Book and it was like, this is what I want to do with my life? Or
yeah, he's talked to me too about, you know, realizing that that's what character animation mm-hmm. was, that the panther was a haughty mm-hmm. panther and the tiger was a really nasty tiger. And he said that that's where he kind of learned how to anthropomorphize mm-hmm. animals. And he obviously did that to great effect in The Lion King and other things. And so I can't wait to see what he's cobbled together for this. And I think there's actually a book that is being sold there and maybe elsewhere too, right?
There is supposed to be a book with the exhibit, though. I think what's happened, and again, you know, you know this from both your, the work you've done on Art of Books. Evidently, they send them off to China to be printed, and we're still dealing with the after effects of COVID and what's going on with container ships and that sort of thing. So Amazon, for example, is listing the book as being available, I want to say, November 8th. And, you know, that got pushed back from, I want an earlier September date. Maybe the museum has got some early copies. I mean, certainly we can check the online store there. But yeah, this is definitely on my list for this year because supposedly we'll get images of the over 300 rare pieces of art and ephemera that are featured as part of the exhibit.
Well, if I get up there, Jim, I'll see if the book is there because obviously I'm still working off my my book that you sent me from the New York Beauty and the Beast thing, the most expensive a companion book ever. So maybe they do have them in the store up there, and I'll be sure to take a look and let everybody know.
Speaking of animation related books, I've been reading Michael Lyons's Drawn to Greatness, Disney's Animation Renaissance, which I think I was mentioning to you, Drew, you know, as we were pre-gaming. It's always a little weird to read a book and then suddenly realize, oh God, I'm a source. But to give Michael credit, he, for example, pulls info from your wonderful History of Hercules, wasn't it? The thing you did for Vanity Fair?
It might have been Goofy.
I stand corrected. Okay. Yeah.
Jim, I've done so many of these things at this point. God knows what it was. But I was amazed to see that he quoted me in that. And you and I were both just quoted in a recent article for The Ringer, too, about the dinosaur.
You know, I just, I always, that's such a weird moment for me. I harken back to, what is it, Groucho Marx. I would never want to belong to a club that would have me as a member. It's a notion of, you're citing me as a source. You need better sources. But to double back to the Jungle Book, one of the things that's especially fascinating to me about this version of old-timey show business, did you see when the Jungle Book was originally released to theaters? I mean, we are so used to animated features, for example, just what happened to Lightyear. You know, you put it out just as the kids are getting out of school in summer blockbuster season, or you release them around Thanksgiving, you know, to get the holiday thing. Jungle Book was originally released, Drew, on October 18th, 1967. October 18th. That's not even Halloween. I mean, why that date?
That's weird. That's very weird.
I agree. Okay. And speaking of release dates, while we know the release date of the first Skydance animation project for Apple TV, and that, of course, is Luck, that's dropping on August 5th, we don't yet have a release date for Spellbound, but we do have info about that film's cast. And what did you make of collection of voice talent, Drew?
I mean, it seems very very prestige-y, we need some heat around mm-hmm. this movie. But also I thought it was interesting that Nathan Lane is back too.
It's been a while.
Should we talk about who it is? Certainly. In this? Okay. So Nicole Kidman and Javier Bardem are reuniting from being the Ricardos, and they are kind of leading up this, what they say, animated musical that tells a story about a princess on a daring quest to save her family mm-hmm. and kingdom. So Kidmore will voice Elsmere, the kind, just, and hyper-precise Queen of Lumbria, alongside Bardem as Solon, the boastful yet big-hearted king. So Rachel Zegler is the voice of the lead character, Princess Elion. And then it's John Lithgow, which is also interesting, right? Because Zegler's going to be Snow White in the live-action Disney movie. I'm sure they were kind of annoyed that Lasseter kind of stole their thunder. But so it's the rest of the cast includes John Lithgow, Jennifer Lewis, Nathan Lane, Andre DeShields, and Jordan Fisher, who we just heard in Turning Red as one of the members of 4Town. Something that they curiously left out of the press release, but, you know.
Go figure. Now, it's interesting you mentioned Javier Bardem because they just dropped the trailer for Lyle Lyle Crocodile. And we just, you know, and he has a huge role in that. You know, Hector P. Vellante, the charismatic owner of Lyle the Crocodile. And speaking of Jordan Fisher and in regard to modern music, Shawn Mendes is the voice of our. By the way,
sorry, you cut out there. What was the last thing you said?
What did you think of the trailer?
Oh, I thought it was cute. I mean, it looks like kind of a stand-in for another Paddington movie. The crocodile looks cute. I think Framestore did the animation for him. So, yeah, I thought it looked fun. I don't know the story. I was never read those books as a child. So, are you familiar with the Lyle Lyle the
Crocodile? Well, I mean, it's, world? You know, this is children's books from 1965, and my mother was the children's librarian in Maynard. So, yes, I definitely read Lyle Lyle Crocodile.
Okay.
They're cute books. Very much in that era. You know, I mean, you know, for example, the... You know, I mean, really sophisticated, you know, writing here, Drew. The evil neighbor is called Mr. Grumps. So, you know.
Oh, I thought you were going to say that Lyle, you know, maybe narrowly escapes political assassination or something. But I see that's the other way it could have been.
There we go. No time did this particular story involve a grassy knoll.
Okay, good. But, okay.
On the other hand, what's kind of interesting is Lyle is kind of a utility project. It wound up being dropped into the October 7th release slot by Sony because they opted to push out Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse to next summer. You know, which is sort of like, okay, your turn, you know, get the crocodile.
Yeah, it seemed to come together very quickly.
Again, I liked the trailer. I thought it looked good. What did you think of the Kung Fu Panda Dragon Knight trailer?
I thought it looked pretty good. I mean, the animation looked a cut above the kind of like more rubbery Camp Cretaceous style DreamWorks TV. And I from what I understand, this is the first chapter in a larger kind of Kung Fu Panda saga. So, you know, it's cool that Jack Black and James Hong are back, and I don't know. I'm interested to see it. Did you like the trailer?
I thought it looked good. And we should also mention here that the series debuts in just a couple of weeks on July 14th on Netflix. Oh, but I wanted to circle back to something you just said in regard to, you know, Framestore and Paddington the Bear and that sort of thing. Did you get to see that little film thing that was done for the Queen's Jubilee?
No, I heard that Paddington was involved. I think this is when I was on my deathbed a couple of weeks ago, but tell me about it.
Well, you can definitely chase it down online. It's still YouTubed and that sort of thing. But it was just this charming little bit of animation of Paddington having tea with the Queen and accidentally drinking all of the tea. But it turns out the Queen and Paddington share a love for marmalade sandwiches. And what genuinely made it work was that the Queen was game. I mean, she, you know, because basically this is something that she had to sit there and, you know, at a table with an actor, and, you know, they had to capture all of the stuff that they would then go back and put the CG in. But, you know, again, it was just this charming little piece, and Paddington thanked her for the Jubilee and thanked her for everything. It was a very sweet little moment.
Did you see the Queen hologram that was driving by that people were waiting at?
You know, yeah, we do live in a very interesting age, don't we? You know, it's like, oh, okay, not the real Queen, but a real carriage, and okay, they're waiting. That's Speaking of animated characters, you got to see all of Baymax Submission Point, the series, right?
Yes.
Which debuts, what, Wednesday of this week? The
29th. Yes. Yeah, it's about 30 to 40 minutes of actual new animation, all done by Walt Disney Animation Studios, many of them directed by our friend Dean Wellens over at the studio, which is great. And let me tell you, Jim, if people were upset about the gay kiss, just wait. There is an openly trans character that you meet during the show. There is an entire episode where Baymax helps out a young girl who is getting her first period. And there is another episode that centers around two men, a gay kind of romance. So I can't wait for the ultra right to be annoyed. But I thought it was a wonderful series. It kind of builds really beautifully. There is a post-credit scene on every episode. So stick around after the credits. And I just thought it was a lot of fun and just really, really great. And great to see Baymax back. And yeah, I just thought it was terrific. So I can't wait to see what people think besides the, you know, the conservatives getting annoyed at everything. But I think you'll really like it, Jim.
Oh, well, I'm so glad to hear that. But to double back just for a moment for Lightyear, because again, I have seen The Kiss, and it's one of these things where it's like, again, isn't it? It's Buzz dropping off his former commander at her quarters, and it turns out it's what, the 40th wedding anniversary or something to that effect?
Yeah.
Right. Okay, so it's the kind of kiss you know, when you've been in a relationship that long and you're coming home and it's a family party, it's a drive-by kiss. It's literally, and, you know, into the room.
Right.
I just don't get why that would be the thing that would make people crazy. It's just a kiss, you know, between people who've been together for 40 years. Isn't that something we should actually celebrate?
I would think so. It's so innocuous, and it's such an inherent part of who the character is that taking it out is just a non-starter. So
I don't know.
I can't wait. We will finally talk about Lightyear next week. If you can get your butt.
I found the theater again. Not an IMAX theater, but I will see it regular size screen. But in the meantime, again, I would just, in a weird sort of way, just thrilled for you about what's going on with Top Gun Maverick. And so, speaking of which, obviously, you know, you guys are deep into covering this on Light the Fuse, Light the Fuselage.
Yes.
What's going on this week with you and Charles over there?
I think this week we are talking to Kevin LaRosa Jr., who was the aerial photographer aerial coordinator or something. And then we have two episodes with Lauren Balfe, who was the music producer and who did the great music you have heard in the trailer for Mission Impossible Dead Reckoning Part 1. So
killer. Okay.
It's going to be fun.
If you're not listening to Drew's podcast, you're missing out on some great behind the scenes Hollywood stories. Likewise, if you're not following Drew on social media, you're also missing out on some really sharp, funny observations.
Sure, it is Drew Tailored, like a tailored shirt on Instagram and Twitter. So, come check. Did you see my Pixar Cats appreciation post?
I did. I did. And
it has almost a million impressions right now. That is insane to me.
Oh my God. I have to tell you, I have deliberately been avoiding. Is it Heaven Sale? What is the name of the company that's made the supersized socks?
Oh, Super 7. Yeah, I know. I'm. It's free shipping right now, Jim, which makes it even more tempting.
I can't.
But yeah, the life size socks, which is $400, which is not an easy pill to swallow, but is movie accurate. What I love about it, which is what Angus said, is it kind of blurs the line between prop replica and character, and it's just a beautiful, beautiful toy. But yeah, I know what you mean, Jim.
Don't do this to me. Okay, that's why you won't follow Drew. You get to see stuff like that. On the other hand, you can find us on Twitter and on Instagram as Jim Hill Media, or over on Facebook as Jim Hill Media News. Nancy would also like me to remind you, we got some other podcasts here. We got Disney Dish with Len Testa. We got Marvelous Disney with Aaron Adams. Also, Looking at Lucasfilm with Brian Gaughan. And Now that Obi-Wan is finally over, I think we're going to record a new show on that stuff. But that's another show, and this show is coming to a close. So thanks for listening, folks. And Drew and I will be back with more animation news next week.